And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for February the 9th, 2023. It is Thursday. One more day till TGIF. Hi, Dave.
Thursday, and I'm thirsty. How are you?
Melody? I'm doing great, thanks.
Happy National Pizza Day.
Pizza?
Yes, it is. I had a slice of leftover mushroom and onion pizza from Gabe's for lunch today. My go-to takeout treat when we don't feel like cooking, which was last night. How about you?
Well, I've been trying, you know, pizzas, I think, one of everybody's one of their favorites, and it's been a while since I've had some pizza, so but I do get a hankering for it.
Well, I'll have to send one your way.
Well, I'll tell you what, nobody had a hankering today for the drop in gold today. I'm assuming the had a pressure on the dollar too, so it's kind of an interesting day with what the markets are doing today. So right now in the New York spot price aftermarket, we have gold down 1530 at 1861. But the high today was 1891. So, and we're just now a little off of the low of the day. So, you know, so there was really no rhyme or reason for it to drop the way it did. Silver was down 37 cents at 22.03. Platinum was down 19 at 962. Palladium was down 22 at 1,701. So the whole precious metals sector was hit. The USDX was down 0.22 at 103.24. Now, the U.S. dollar did come back a little bit in the index from what we've seen, you know, last week and earlier this week. So don't know if that had something. So it'll be an interesting day tomorrow. Crude oil was down 0.84 at 77.63. Paper markets today, the Dow was down 250 points, 33,699. S&P was down 36 at 4,081. And the NASDAQ was down at 1%, 11,989. European markets, they were all positive. Asian markets, Nikkei was lower, but Hang Seng and Shanghai were both strong. He had good markets. The 10-year yield is higher, 3.664%. And that was up 0.028. And natural gas was up 2.21% at 2.449. So, you know, that really has taken a beating. And, you know, no one is really talking about it, but there is, you know, the natural gas it creates other worries. I mean, there was a 46% drop in natural gas prices this year. So that across the U.S. shale patch threatening to slow drilling and chill deal making. In a move unthinkable just only 6 months ago. Remember, we were reporting those high numbers in natural gas. Analysts are chopping their outlook for gas prices this year and for production and earnings. So, again, this is not healthy to see those numbers drop. So the number of active gas drilling rigs jumped about 48% to 157 in the first 6 months of 2022. And you know, it's kind of interesting to see what type of impacts it's going to have going forward if it doesn't rebound pretty soon. So we'll see if there's any type of collapse in the drilling and deal making and so where that happens and how that impacts other markets. So, and that's why I've been following that, because when you have something drop like that, Dave, it's a you know, there's dominoes that are following through. It's not always a good thing. So,
nope, it's, sometimes it's be careful what you ask for.
Yeah.
Cause, you just, there's so much interdependence in the financial markets these days, and much of it is below the surface and not obvious. So it's another scratch your head kind of moment, but we'll do our best to, you know, stay after it and let you know what's going on out there.
Well, you know, I don't know. This is kind of icky, Dave. It's kind of icky. I don't like talking about infections. But former Treasury Secretary Larry Summers compared falling levels of inflation in the economy to a half-healed infection that could worsen if not treated properly. And he was speaking yesterday on a podcast, and he's an economist and former president of the Harvard University, said there's no doubt consumer price pressures have eased and the economy is very strong given a low headline unemployment rate. He added, the hard thing to judge is whether inflation is on a strong enough downward trajectory to get to the 2% target. So he says government reports says inflation has been easing since mid-2022. And so I'm not quite sure his theory of a halfway healed infection. I mean, there's this, we're going to talk about the continued layoffs that we're seeing and more people are applying for unemployment. So, again, I just don't get their theory that you raise rates and it's supposed to cool the economy, but yet the economy is very strong, and they give praises for the unemployment rate. Well, that based on their theory of why we have inflation, that should make inflation higher, not lower, right, Dave? I mean, am I thinking that right?
Everyone has their target audiences. And that's why I've come around to the way of thinking that almost everybody out there, you know, whether they're a professor, whether, you know, they're former cabinet member, whatever their lot in life, that by and large, there are exceptions, but by and large, everyone is speaking to multiple audiences. And it's resulted in so much stinking confusion because people talk out of both sides of their mouth because they need to hear one audience hear one point they're trying to make. And then there's another audience out there that they don't want to tick off so much. So they've got to, you know, sort of restate their thesis in another way to placate that target audience. So it's almost like you've got to take so much of this stuff with a grain of salt, because all it's done really is create so much more uncertainty. That's all I have to say about that for now.
No, I mean, you know, and that's correct. And that's why we go over these reports and so forth, because, you know, and that's why so many of them, we do report them, but we kind of ignore them. But that's what everybody makes their investment decisions on. And they're wrong following these people when they do talk from, you know, and we hope to bring that when we report on, we hope to show you that these, you know, how wrong they are. And it's because it isn't, inflation is not, they can raise the rates as long as they want. And I think that the slowing economy that we would have now is not just based on higher rates. There's a whole lot more going on in the background. So anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I get Summers, what his analogy. You know, you have an ear infection or strep throat or whatever, you got a 10-day course of antibiotics. If, you know, you're into that, the doctor says take it until it's gone. Well, some might forget about it and stop taking it after the fourth or fifth day, and maybe it hasn't cleared up completely. And so, you know, I guess he's suggesting that, you know, don't get too comfortable just yet, that we still have a long way to go to treat what ails us. I'm glad to see, anyway, that he says a recession in the coming year is more likely than not.
Yeah. Well, wasn't he the one that I quoted the other day about what he thought about the Europe is a museum, Japan is a nursing home, and China is a jail. So he's full of me. He's got a lot of those little his little cliches and whatever. Okay, government debt. Okay. The Fed has been the primary focus on the market since 2020. We've seen these generous spending bills have resulted in a massive increase in the overall money supply. I'm not sure. Let's see, at the end of 2019, the M2 money supply was $15 trillion. By March 2022, it had climbed over $6.5 trillion to a peak of $21.9 trillion before dipping as we saw 2023 get underway. So the Fed has, when we talk about this, you know this, the Fed's increasing interest rates to fight the inflation. While this has been somewhat successful, I don't think it's just raising rates that's successful. I think there's other things going on that is showing that inflation is going down, and I'm not quite sure it has the full impact of the Fed doing the rate increases, but so we saw inflation falling. We had a peak of over 9% last summer, and it is down in some areas and is still up in others. So, and since 2020, the federal government debt has been increased by $8 trillion. And we are now at $31.4 trillion. And with the current Fed funds rate at 4.5% to 4.75%, that puts the estimated yearly interest payment on the nation's debt at around $575 billion just for 2023. And for comparison, the U.S. paid roughly $475 billion in 2022 and $352 billion in 2021 when rates were near zero. And as we continue to see this, as the number continues to spiral, there's no clear answer on how to get it under control. So all we're doing, folks, is servicing the debt. So when you hear someone out there saying, well, we cut the debt and blah, blah, blah. No. Go ahead, Dave.
No, it's pretty amazing. I'm kicking myself in the butt because I had meant to look back to see when the last time total federal government spending was $575 billion. It wasn't a heck of a long time ago. I won't even venture a guess. I'm guessing around 10 years, 12 years ago. That's not a whole long time, and now we're spending it that amount on just interest to our debt holders. And of course, if the Fed decided to print more money to buy back the debt, well, that's then you're talking about hyperinflation. And I mean, it's a difficult concept from an investing perspective. I mean, you generally shouldn't hold cash for too long anytime because you're losing purchasing power while you wait for inflation to keep coming down, especially the inflation rates, you know, whether they're 6.5%, 9%, you're losing money by holding it. But as markets have shown, the uncertainty causes, high growth stocks to decline substantially. On the one hand, rising interest rates could also begin to cripple any company that's already struggling or especially relying on debt to fund their growth, their operation. And, we see what's happened, what's going on, what's been going on in the bond market the last couple of years. Look, instead, what investors should be thinking about in this environment, in any environment, but particularly in this, is putting more of your assets into gold. It's the only true long-term store of value. If you want to learn more, call Melody at 1-800-375-4188.
Well, thank you, Dave. Very nice. you know, it's interesting. You know, the big talk is the debt ceiling, that it wants to be, they need to raise it. And, you know, you have the scuttlebutt back and forth. And it's been said multiple times, there's no way they're going to default on the dollar, that they're on the dollar, that they're going to raise the debt ceiling, but they want to raise it as long as there's, you know, some accountability in some areas in order to, you know, and they're, all they're doing is justifying themselves to their constituents that, so it really, to me, I think it's meaningless, because anything that they want to do and try to, you know, cut back really isn't going to make any difference. I mean, we just said, now look at what we're servicing in debt. I mean, it's a far cry from anything that they can do to really make a difference. Because the things that they really need to make a difference, that it would make a difference, they're not going to do. We know that. So, you know, again, it's the dog and pony show, and hopefully the McCarthy will meet with Biden, and I guess they're supposed to maybe as soon as tomorrow, and continue talks about raising the debt limit. You know, there's a big scuttle about who said this about cutting Social Security, Medicare, and, you know, both sides accuse each other of saying it and then not saying it. And you can go back through the records, and they probably both said it. But they're not going to do it. But they do need to address, because it will be insolvent. So that is something that needs to be addressed. So I'm not quite sure when. I mean, we have Social Security and Medicare trust funds. They're projected to hit funding crisis in 2035 and 2028. But, you know, they never say anything about Medicaid. And that's what irritates me. And, you know, we've got how many more millions of people going on these programs recently. So they're not doing anything to stop people going on it. They just want to stop. I don't know what they want to do, but they're going to have to do something. And they're going to raise the rates. I mean, they're going to raise the debt ceiling, Dave. You know, I don't know how they're going to identify what cuts they're going to make and how they're going to show it. And, you know, they'll eventually come to some agreement and they'll raise the debt ceiling and we'll move on. What say you?
Indeed, they will. These cuts have put out by the House Budget Committee chair, the new chair, Jody Arrington, Republican of Texas, said these are just coming off the top of his head. And because we're heading into a break, ladies and gentlemen, you'll have to read about it on your own, or we can pick it up when we come back.
Yep, you betcha. We'll pick it up when we come back. Stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter and the blog, produced, presented, and edited by our own Dave Allen. Let's just finish up, Dave. I don't know if you wanted to add some more to the.
Well, yeah, you know, it's knowing this is so preliminary, and I think the reason that Jody Arrington released this very tentative list of potential cuts was just to say, hey, look, there are cuts out there that we could talk about and agree to, some of which could have a decent impact, but at least according to this list, you know, it's not going to put a major dent in the deficit or our national debt, and I get a little concerned when I see that among the largest of proposed cuts are to stamp out so-called fraud, waste, and abuse in certain programs, because they typically don't occur, and that it ends up being much to do about not so much. It's not that, you know, the intentions, the good intentions aren't necessarily there. I think I'll just stop there, Melody, and say let's wait and see what's brought to the table by both parties. And, you know, we'll react from there. How about that?
Yeah. Well, as far as I'm concerned, it's all optics. And, you know, they're just going to do something. It's not going to make any difference whatsoever. The debt's too big. There's nothing they could do in order to change anything around. So it's all theater. It's all optics. It's all about campaign. It's all about their elections. And, I mean, just like you had what's his name? Cruz. Am I thinking of Cruz out of Texas?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was him who wanted to do something about the term limits, and then he runs for his third. Wanted to introduce two term limits, and then he runs for the third one. I mean, it's just like, really?
I like it here. I like all this dark money we get that we can kind of use for almost anything.
Yeah, I know. So to think that anything is going to – That to me, they're just wasting their time because it is worthless. Jobless claims, the number of Americans filing new claims for unemployment benefits increased more than expected, 196,000 ending February 4th. You know, so we're going to start seeing those go up, I would think. Do you want to touch anything on that, Dave?
No, let me just say this. They've been so low the last several weeks that, you know, that together with some of the monthly jobs created numbers made you wonder what is going on with data collection in this country. Again, because of the mixed signals we've been getting. But now this one, at least it's up a little bit from last week, but I'm not sure it really matters a whole lot. In fact, I would suggest it matters very little in isolation. I think that, you know, we're going to have to wait a couple of more months. I think we're looking at least till the end of the first quarter to see if what these trends mean. Are we going to start to see an uptick now in week-to-week jobless claims numbers? Are they going to continue to exceed these expectations, or what? I do think the you know, the number that I see that I think has a bigger impact here are the fact that there's so many gosh darn job openings for every unemployed person. I mean, two job openings for every person, and yet workers remain scarce, they say. I mean, we got the supply management survey last week showed that some of the service businesses say they're unable to hire qualified labor, saying that supply is thin. So, again, just more mixed signals. I'm sorry I don't have too much more substantive to add about this, Melody. Just looking through this article and seeing seeing different signals, that just, I think, has my my mind going in a thousand different directions. So.
And, you know, just real quick before we move on, you know, Butch has been bringing a lot of info on this war in Ukraine. And, you know, there was reports out that now you have Russia that is really ramping up with more tanks, more armored vehicles, more artillery systems, rocket launchers and so forth. And you still have Zelensky looking for fighter jets from all European nations. And, you know, everyone has said no so far, which thank God they have. Hope they keep their heads. And so everybody's putting a date to where Russia will ramp up the fighting, maybe on the one-year anniversary. And so, I mean, it's new stuff comes out every day. It's hard, Dave, to know what is propaganda anymore, what is the truth, and you know, how is this being exaggerated? Because, you know, Zelensky's wants those, he wants real bad those fighter jets. So I don't know. It's a little frightening to see this going on. And
yeah, I don't know either, Melody. And it is frightening. And The thing of it is that we're at the mercy of just a handful of quote world leaders, unquote.
That's what's scary. That's the scary part.
You know, behind that all, or underneath it, is this military industrial complex. Yep. That works both sides of the equation, mind you.
Yep.
Whether you know, it's in weaponry, ammunition, places like, or organizations like the Wagner Group, that's supposedly providing tens of thousands, if not more, fighters for the Russians. I'm curious about how many American and European mercenaries, privately employed mercenaries, are involved in this. But you can be sure that
they are.
That they are, and that Zelensky's unannounced trip to the UK and France yesterday had a lot to do with intelligence reports showing a big buildup in Russia and near the border with Ukraine. It's I almost sound naive saying let's hope for the best, but unfortunately in this case there's not a whole lot more we can do except hope that sanity prevails.
But the thing of it is, you know, once we started giving tanks, and they and Russia knows that tanks will be heading into Ukraine's way, what did you expect them to do? I mean, no one is trying to stop this.
It's like
they
a trade
want
war.
This. They want this to happen.
Yeah, it's a trade war. It's akin to a trade war. You know, you do this, I'll do that.
But I mean, it's not. I mean, no one is talking.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I mean, no one is talking. No one is trying to, you know, change anything, negotiate. It's, you know, we're coming down to the wire and this will come to a head. And, you know, so, and I don't like to see what that's going to look like. But small businesses continue to struggle. Nearly half of small business owners, 47%, say the economy is in a recession already. Gee, maybe they ought to get their statistics from these people. With an almost equal percentage, 48%, describing the economy as poor. Now, this is according to the CNBC SurveyMonkey Small Business Survey for the first quarter of 2023. Notably, the data are virtually unchanged from the fourth quarter. And even though there's sentiment that maybe the economy and the markets improved a little, markets might have improved, but I don't think the economy has. One reason given for why investors have become more bullish is that stocks have already discounted recession, you know, and that's what everybody's talking. Everybody thinks that the market is ready to break out. I just have a hard time buying that. The latest Business Council survey of CEOs showed a decline of 13% to just 5% among chief executives who expect a deep recession, Dave.
But you have those like former Fed Vice Chair Roger Ferguson, who said it will be a shallow recession. So I would argue overall, he added, that this is less pessimistic set of CEOs right now, but not actually moving into optimistic territory. Now, 57% in the survey said the economy was in recession as of the third quarter of last year, notably higher than now. Still, pessimism among small businesses and their lack of confidence in the Fed to get inflation under control, where only 31% think it's up to the task, persist, even as signs are beginning to show that at least in goods in the supply chain, their inflation is declining. An interesting survey, 75% think it's yet to reach its peak inflation, that is. 75% of small business owners say they're still facing rising costs of supply, and a little more than half supply chain disruptions. So I know how data driven the Fed, for example, is to a fault, I believe, sometimes. And it does make you wonder how they should take into effect this kind of anecdotal evidence, not just in challenging times, but, all along. But inevitably, habits are hard to break. Mm-hmm. So this is interesting information, I think, for the rest of us who don't engage in this technical, technocratic thinking.
And, you know, we talk about this inflation and, you know, and everybody's, oh, inflation's going down. Oh, inflation's going down. No, think again. We have Valentine's coming. And what is interesting, and, you know, this 2/3. Here, let me just start from the beginning. Chocolates and dinners, which is what people do for Valentine's Day. Nearly half of Americans reported plans to put what they have been their Valentine's Day spending towards living expenses, such as gas, rent, and groceries. So that's a big chunk out of the economy. Even those who are exchanging gifts say they expect to cut back, with 2/3 of them intending to spend at least 10% less this year due to inflation. Here's a little bit of a breakdown of how much the cost of popular Valentine's Day gifts have changed in the past year. And chocolates, they're 12% more expensive. The price of chocolate candy bar rose to $2.60 in December. Candy bar, $2.60. 12% increase from the year before. Like many grocery store items, supply chain disruptions, you know, again, they're blaming higher chocolate prices in 2022. I don't believe chain disruptions is that problem, but they can use that. Droughts, yes. Shortage of cocoa beans, yes. Also caused chocolate productions to fall behind demand. What else is in there, Dave?
Oh, there's stationery and so forth, 16% higher than last year. Romantic dinner for two, 8% more expensive this year. Although this article does point out the cost of filet mignon is running about 20% less. I suspect... And that cutting back of 10%, I think we'll find out, will have been undercounted by a large amount. I think, you know, if people are spending $100 on a dinner, they're not going to just cut back $10. They're probably just not going to go out to eat at all. We're going to stay at home and cook a dinner. You got a dozen roses, 5% less expensive, mind you, which is interesting. The thinkers here believe that you know, people will consider having a picnic in their local park or down by the river, depending on where they live and the weather. Or just stay in and enjoy a night watching a new movie or so. After all, the most important part of Valentine's Day is spending time with a loved one. And that's priceless, right, Melody?
I guess. Oh, Lord. But it is true. It's interesting just to see the increases. And, you know, a dozen roses, I mean... They're 5% less expensive, but yet a dozen roses is still going to cost you $100. You know, I mean, they're extremely overpriced to begin with. But, you know, you can buy roses at Walmart now, and you know, and I think that has a little bit of an impact on why. You used to be able just to get them at the florist. Now you can get them anywhere, even at your grocery store. So we'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
So open up, I'm climbing in. So take it easy.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio, Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen, Melody taking care of client business. This final segment, you know where to get her, 1-800-375-4188. Now, some economists are saying that the Biden administration's 1% stock buyback tax, which was included in last year's Inflation Reduction Act, went into effect January 1st this year, will have little impact overall in the stock market. Others believe it might actually help it. The new excise tax has set off alarms in some corners of Wall Street on the theory that buybacks were one of the biggest props supporting the past decade's bull market. And perhaps that is one of the big problems. And they say anything that weakens that prop could lead to much lower share prices. But even more bells went off Tuesday night after the president telegraphed his desire during the State of the Union to quadruple that tax on buyback to 4%. Now, while this proposal is already considered dead on arrival on Capitol Hill, it probably shouldn't be. I know a lot of us are tax averse in general, but here's one that, you know, aside from the principle of things, could in the long run generate some funding if it's used for the right purpose. In any event, the focus on possibly increasing this tax from 1% to 4% no doubt reduces the likelihood that it's going to be eliminated anytime soon. Yet, stock market bulls, or should I say bullies, shouldn't worry. One reason is that the new excise tax, whether it's 1% or 4%, is applied to net buybacks. That is, repurchases in excess of how many shares the corporation may have issued in a given year. As has been widely reported for years, the shares that many companies are buying back are often barely enough to compensate for the new shares they issue as part of their compensation of company executives. As a result, net repurchases, which the new tax will be levied on, are an order of magnitude smaller than gross repurchases. And there's a lot of irony in that. Much of the political rhetoric that led to the creation of the tax was based on the complaint that companies were repurchasing their shares simply to reduce the share dilution that would otherwise occur when CEOs, CFOs are given shares as part of their pay. but it's precisely when share repurchases equal share issuance that the tax wouldn't apply. The reason why some say the new tax on share repurchases might actually help the stock market traces to the impact they say it could have on companies' dividend policies. Up until now, the tax code provided an incentive for firms to repurchase shares rather than pay dividends when they wanted to return cash to shareholders. By at least partially removing that incentive, companies going forward could turn to dividends more than they did previously. For example, the Bipartisan Tax Policy Center estimates that the new 1% buyback tax will lead to a roughly 1.5% increase in corporate dividend payouts. That would be good news in theory for the market, because dollar for dollar, a higher dividend yield has more bullish effects than a higher buyback yield. To show this, Market Watch columnist Mark Halbert compared the predictive abilities of both yields. Forgive the technicality of this. He analyzed quarterly data back to the early 90s, which is when the total volume of buybacks in the market began to be significant. Excuse me. His analysis shows that while the new buyback tax is unlikely to have a huge impact, the impact it does have might be more positive than negative. The bottom line, well, while the new buyback tax is unlikely to have a huge impact on the stock market, the impact it does have will probably be more positive than negative, even though this tax is on a net basis and not a gross. One way to help ensure a positive impact, well, because it is on net, increase the excise tax to 4%. Now, corporations bought back a record $132 billion in shares in January alone. Add another $40 billion in Facebook parent company Meta's buyback this month, and you have the start of another huge manipulation of stock market prices. We've got a slew of oil companies making record profits, big buybacks they've announced, increases in dividends, nothing for the good old consumer, and very, very little direct increases in oil production. For all of 2022, there are an estimated $1.22 trillion worth of buybacks, which contributed 3.7% to S&P 500 earnings per share growth in the fourth quarter alone. Look, you want to take advantage of a good thing? Fine. Just pay your fair share. Now, for much of the past 2 years, corporate America has been able to raise prices, which, with much of the higher prices juicing their profits. Now, the opposite actually looks to be true. Margins are beginning to compress, which could help the inflation cool down that appears to be underway. One takeaway from corporate fourth quarter earnings season is a turnaround from recent years when strong consumer demand allowed companies to pass along higher costs more easily. In a speech last month, Fed Vice Chair Lyle Brainard described a price spiral where companies in some sectors had been hiking prices for consumers by more than their own costs ultimately rose. She said the compression of these markups as supply constraints ease, inventory rise, and demand cools could contribute to disinflationary pressures. Now, many left-of-center commentators and politicians have advanced a narrative where corporate greed has been the primary driver of high inflation. In the oil and gas industry, oil particular, I can see that. A more mainstream view is that prices were driven higher by excess demand in the economy due to pent-up savings and aggressive pandemic stimulus, no doubt a factor. And now constrained supply tied to the pandemic reopening, not to mention Putin's war in Ukraine. But whichever those narratives you embrace, it's clear that more of the economic gains of the last couple of years have flowed more to profits than to employee competition. So corporate America may get squeezed in the months ahead as supply and demand come into balance, which would be bad news for stocks, but good news for consumers getting hammered by higher prices. Now, Evans Ambrose Pritchard, that's a hyphenated last name, Evans Ambrose Pritchard, writes in The Telegraph that monetary tightening is like pulling a brick across a rough table with a piece of elastic. Central banks tug and tug, nothing happens. Then they tug again and the brick leaps off the surface right into their face. Or as Nobel economist Paul Krugman puts it, the task is like trying to operate complex machinery in a dark room wearing thick mittens. Lag times, blunt tools, bad data, they all make it impossible to execute a beautiful soft landing. Well, the U.S. economy went into recession in November 2007, much earlier than originally thought, and almost a year before the collapse of Lehman Brothers. But the Fed didn't know or didn't acknowledge that at the time. The Fed's main prediction model was showing an 8% risk of recession. Today, it's under 5%. Evans Pritchard says the Fed never catches recessions and is beyond useless, referring to the model. Well, Fed officials later grumbled that they would not have taken such a hawkish line on inflation in 2008 and therefore wouldn't have set off the chain reaction that brought the global financial system to our knees, had the data told them what was really happening. Now, one might respond that had the Fed and its peers paid more attention, or any attention for that matter, to the drastic monetary slowdown underway in early to mid-2008, well, perhaps they would have known about, you know, what was about to hit them. So where does that leave us today as the Fed and other central banks raise interest rates at the fastest pace and in the most aggressive fashion in 40 years? Well, and with massive QT thrown in for good measure? You guessed it, monetarists are crying again. The apocalypse is coming. The apocalypse is coming. They're accusing central banks of unforgivable back-to-back errors. First, it unleashed the high inflation of the early 2020s with an explosive monetary expansion, as we explained in today's first segment, money supply. Then it swung to the other extreme of monetary contraction, on both occasions with a general disregard for the standard quantity theory of money. You have economics professor Steve Hanke at Johns Hopkins U that who said the Fed has made two of its most dramatic monetary mistakes since its establishment in 1913. The growth rate of the broad-based M2 money supply has actually turned negative. It's a rare, very rare event. The indicators contracted at an unusual pace of 5.5% over the last 3 months. But it's not just the monetarists who are bumming out, though they're the most emphatic and vocal right now. Pritchard points to three former chief IMF economists of different stripes that have raised cautionary flags as well. Ken Rogoff, Maury Obstfeld, and Raghuram Rajan. Pritchard points out that, well, the new Keynesian establishment is split itself. Krugman is warning that the Fed's relying on backward-looking measures of inflation, or worse, imputed measures like shelter and core services that paint a false picture and raise the danger of over-tightening. And Adam Slater from Oxford Economics said central banks are moving into overkill territory. He's warning policy may already be too tight. The full impact of the monetary tightening has yet to be felt, given that transmission lags from policy changes can be 2 years or more. Slater said the combined tightening shock of rates together with the switch from QE to QT amounts to 6.6% in the U.S. That is 9% in the Eurozone and 13% in the U.K. He believes excess money created by central banks during the pandemic has largely evaporated. I don't quite see that, but the growth rate of new money is collapsing at the fastest rate ever recorded. I think you can quarrel with that. So Pritchard asks, what should we make of last year's primo positive jobs report, which really contradicts recessionary signals? Pritchard asks, well, he reminds us, that the jobs data is erratic and often heavily revised and almost always misleads when the cycle turns. Employment didn't peak, for example, until 8 months after the start of the severe 73 to 75 recession. So he says, don't be fooled. A recession really is coming. Now, is the Fed's pal right to fear a repeat of the 70s when inflation seemed to fall back only to take off again with yet worse consequences because the Fed relaxed policy too soon the first time? Well, perhaps. But the money supply never crashed this way when the Fed made its historic mistake in the mid-70s. Critics say he's putting too much weight on the wrong risk. Thus, it's an open question whether the Fed, the ECB, or the Bank of England will screw up most. For now, the focus is on the Fed because, well, it happens to be furthest along in the cycle. All measures of the Treasury yield curve are flagging a massive and sustained inversion, which would normally tell the Fed to stop tightening immediately. Larry Goodman, who heads the Center for Financial Stability in New York, which tracks measures of money, said inflation and growth are slowing more dramatically than many believe. And although nobody saw the global financial crisis coming in September 2008, or if anyone saw it, they mostly kept it to themselves or their warnings were ignored. We often say that past performance is no guarantee of what happens in the future. Well, unfortunately, it's just as often true that those who don't learn from the past are condemned to repeat it. That's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody back tomorrow with Butch to close out the week. Also, be on the lookout for our weekly What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog in your email inboxes in the morning. Thanks, as always, to our engineer, Todd, and to you for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. I hope I'm feeling better soon, and I hope you are, too. Please be safe out there. Bye-bye.